almost 20 years ago, when I was a series regular on The Invisible Man on the Sci-Fi Channel, back when it was S-I-F-I, not S-Y-F-Y, you idiots. Back then, I was a series regular. First season, not. Second season, I was made of a series regular. This is beside the point, but I feel as though I need to tell you these things. I was a series regular on the Sci-Fi Channel, Invisible Man. It's on Hulu now. You can watch all of them right now. We got Hulu like last month, and my son still hasn't watched any of the episodes. Watched all the Bob's Burgers twice, Family Guy's twice, but not The Invisible Man. There's only 46 episodes. Go watch them. That's not the point, though. That's not the point I'm trying to make right now in tonight's deep dive. But when we were doing the show almost 20 years ago, almost two decades ago, the internet was coming on strong, and we started getting the message boards, and the thing that people, the fans, wanted the most was surprising to me, especially as a sci-fi guy, as a Star Trek guy, until I thought about it. But the thing they wanted the most were the bloopers. It was fascinating. The thing that they clamored for is like, are there any gag reels? Is there any bloopers? Is there any like deleted scenes or any times you guys went up on your lines? They asked this in the first season. They asked them in the second season. They were so insistent upon it. And as a testament to how strong the internet would eventually become, how much it would influence producers and writers and showrunners and networks, if you watch the second season opening of The Invisible Man, when they show every character, including my own, they inserted a blooper of each of us in the opening credits. You'll watch, there'll be like two or three clips of each person, Vincent Vitresca, Paul Benvictor, and they'll show two or three clips of them with their name underneath, and the last one is always them gagging out, them doing some sort of like goofy stuff. And if you watch me, you can see me kind of break as I'm waiting to do my character, my little, you know, character Eberts. It was so powerful for those fans to see that, to get that connection. And the reason I bring that up right now, after that long opening, is because it's related to the episode I want to talk about tonight, to the deep dive I want to talk about. And that's The Trouble with Tribbles. And the reason I want to correlate that is because The Trouble with Tribbles, and I'm kind of like blowing the lead right now, but The Trouble with Tribbles is in fact a fanfic. It's a fan fiction, and it's great, it's wonderful, but it is to some degree giving the audience what it wants, which is the cast, the actors, the characters having fun. And so join me tonight as I take a quick deep dive into one of my favorite episodes of Star Trek, the original series, The Trouble with Tribbles.
Are you insane?
They are insane!
In the hands of an adolescent.
It is a cellular peptide cake.
But Matt Frosting.
It does like you.
Mr. Kent.
Hi, Christopher, I'm Nero.
How you doing, Mike?
Here's Spock.
Whoops!
I meant to say that it should be a whole new way.
I'm coming back from a cold. All right, so let's do this. If you heard our last podcast, our year in review, which probably I should just probably cap off the year. It's a pretty good year in review. We talked inside a business center in a hotel, which was kind of awkward. But you know what? Who cares? Who cares, right? But the doctor, Kim Miller, my friend, Jason Mikaris, my friend, Kim especially, she likes the deep dives. Some people like the deep dives, but they take a little bit of time for me to ruminate on. I can easily watch an episode and have hot takes on all this sort of stuff, and I have like a broken encyclopedic knowledge of the original series and like a lot of knowledge about Next Generation and some knowledge about DS9, and then it, you know, falls off successively after that. But to do a deep dive where it's just me talking to you wherever you may be, I have to dig a little bit deeper. I have to actually watch the episode a couple times. I have to do some research on a couple of books. I have to think about what it's all about and then kind of formulate it and then vomit it onto you in that attractive fashion. So I have some notes here. I don't know how it's all going to spill out. I don't, you know, but that's okay. That's okay, because that's what this is all about. This is me diving deep. As I said before, Trouble with Tribbles is one of my favorite episodes, and I loved it, and then I didn't like it, and then I've grown to love it again, and I'll tell you why. It has always been marked as one of the top 3 to 5 best episodes of the original series. And when I watched it as a kid, later on, I actually grew to not enjoy it. And it's because of the tone that it takes. And this is something, it's not me alone. In fact, some of the producers and Leonard Nimoy, a lot of people felt the tone of The Trouble with the Tribbles was too much. It was too farcical. It was too absurd. And so I kind of stepped away from it a little bit. I said, yeah, it's a good episode. But for me personally, I think I, on a psychological way, gravitated toward other comedy episodes. If I wanted to point out to my favorite comedy episodes of Star Trek, and there's not that many. There's not that many Star Trek episodes that you can say, this is pure comedy. There's a couple in TNG, a couple of Deep Space Nine. But overall, the tone has to be serious. And there is good precedent for it because it's a ridiculous subject. Science fiction is always the most ridiculous thing you can talk about because it is all speculative. And it is so easy for an audience to stop believing in it if the actors and the writers and the producers don't believe in it. And if you don't believe me, watch Lost in Space. Watch the first couple of episodes of Lost in Space. They are great. They are great science fiction, black and white. It's about a family. And watch the new show on Netflix. I'm not talking about the new show on Netflix is all solid science fiction. The movie in 2000 or 1996 or whatever it was is also tries to be hardcore science fiction. And it's not bad. It's okay. Excuse me. But the series, the original series in 1964, with the theme music by John Williams, second season is great, started off as hardcore science fiction. And then it went off the rails because Dr. Smith became a big part of it and began to be a goofball in it and a little timid mouse. And that gained traction with the audience and gained traction with the network. And all of a sudden, every week it was Will Robinson and Dr. Smith running around being jackasses and having space pirates and rock monsters and all sorts of, well, there's rock monsters in Star Trek, and all sorts of ridiculous stuff. That was a pattern that Star Trek did not want to replicate. And it was easy to go down that path. It is still easy to go down that path. It's nowadays, science fiction shies so far to the serious to avoid that, that it becomes dour. You get stuff like Battlestar Galactica, which is good, but there is nary a joke in sight. And if it is, it is always so deeply grounded in the characters that there's no chance you will think of it as anything but a slight smile before, like, Baltar stabs someone in the back again. Star Trek, for the first season, was as serious as it could be. I mean, it had the episode like The Square of Gothos, but even that is deeply rooted in a sort of Twilight Zone kind of reveal that the big bad was actually a child. But here we are coming into second season, and they've done some really good episodes, and they've got the wind to their backs, and they're having some fun. And so a couple episodes slip through, which are fun, including the episode right before it, which was I, Mudd, which sees the return of Harry Mudd and really elevates his comedy to again, a farcical, absurd realm. Now, I don't like I, Mudd as much because it does get into just slapstick nonsense with all the pantomiming and trying to make robots like disconnect. So, as I said, I kind of moved away from The Trouble with Tribbles. I like The Squire of Gothos because, again, it's motivated and it's absurd with this character being absurd and Kirk having to react. And maybe that's why I'm liking Trouble Tribbles again. I also liked A Piece of the Action, because in A Piece of the Action, Kirk and Spock and company find themselves in this ridiculous planet that's a 1930s gangster copy. And in order to communicate with them, they are forced to speak like 1930s gangsters and are forced to adapt to that madness of the Iotians. And see, I just remembered that name, the Iotians. I remember that. They never return. The Iotians would have been good to have them return. But so there are moments of comedy in Star Trek, but none of them are as strong as A Trouble with Tribbles. And as I said, I had shied away because it seemed like it was too much. It was too goofy. It was too, for a young man who wanted to believe in space travel, for a young man who wanted to go off into the stars, something like that made me nervous. Like, what if we go back to the Lost in Spacey kind of stuff? And so I sort of stopped watching The Trouble with Tribbles. It didn't really come into my rotation of episodes I wanted to sit and watch. It seemed too light, too frivolous, too much folly. And then what happened was, well, two things. One, I did this podcast, and I started looking at some of my favorite episodes, including Balance of Terror and City on the Edge of Forever. Another one I sort of shied away from because it was so emotionally draining for me. So I have these two polar opposites, one that is too light and one that is too heavy. And so I, like, to me, the Balance of Terror is the balance of episode. Bum, bum, bada, bum, 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 bum. All right. So I shied away from those, but I ended up, the second thing that happened was in this podcast was that my son started to become involved in the Trek lore, and he wanted to watch these. So I had him watch City on the Edge of Forever, which he loved. Hadn't watched The Balance of Terror, which he liked. He watched Square of Gothos, which he just adored. William Campbell, keep him in mind. He will come back into this episode. And then I thought, well, let's show him Trouble with Tribbles and let's watch it myself and see what I thought. And you know what? I loved it. Oh my God, I loved it. It was so good. It was so... Let me put this to you. If you're not a big TOS fan, let's say you're a TNG fan, wouldn't you love just to have like a whole episode of the crew of Picard and Riker and Data and Geordi and Deanna and Dr. Crusher sitting around and a whole hour of them just playing poker? Wouldn't that be great? Just palling around, having fun, you know, not big stakes, just doing regular day-to-day stuff. This is sort of what the original series is in this episode, The Trouble with Tribbles. It is your friends coming in and having a good time, and the stakes aren't that big. And it gives the actors and the characters a chance to breathe, to open up and have fun. And it is fan fiction, and it is absurd. And if you do a few more of those, you get into Lost in Space. You get Cyrano Jones and Harvey Mudd. And boy, they put those two together. And for the longest time, I thought they wanted to cast the Harvey Mudd actor in this. And I realized now that was not possible because he did the episode right before that. So that's on me. I didn't realize that. But we learn, don't we? But you string too many of those together and you start getting into farce. But alone, Trouble with Tribbles is amazing. And watching it now for the third or fourth time in the past like 6 months, I am floored by how good it is. So let's dive into it a little more. I could just tell you my big review about it, but let's just kind of skim through it as I literally will skim through the episode here via Netflix. We start off with Kirk and Spock talking with Chekhov, giving him a lesson on Sherman's planet. You know, here's another thing, too, I want to say. The original series had great names for some planets. They had Wrigley's Pleasure Planet, which later on, I think, became like Ariza. They had Sherman's Planet. You know, it was like the old days when, like, I discovered this place. I'm naming this place. Los Angeles has a lot of that. There, I didn't realize this, but I live in Van Nuys, California. I used to live in Sherman Oaks, not Sherman's Planet, but Sherman Oaks. And Van Nuys is named after the realtor who started selling property in this area. A guy by the name of Van Nuys. I think, I don't know what his first name was. Maybe it's Dave Van Nuys. And another guy, I think his name was Sherman. I mean, literally, I think it was Edward Rice Burroughs moved to California and named an area nearby us Tarzana in honor of Tarzan. If you find something, you get to name it. Now, the weird thing is they say that this guy named John Burke from the Royal Telescope Society found it. If your name is John Burke, why not name it Burke's Planet? Why call it Sherman's Planet? Maybe I missed that. But anyways, we have some lighthearted nonsense with Chekhov. It was supposed to be Sulu. Sulu was off. George Takei was off shooting the Green Berets with John Wayne for most of second season. That's why you won't see him sometimes, especially in this episode. But it gives us a chance to kind of let Chekhov, the new character, breathe a little bit, have him hit the Russia thing. We get that a couple of times. And then, out of nowhere, there's a priority alert. I'm actually going to, let's see, what is it? It's a general order something. Trouble with tribbles. Yeah, I'm looking at Memory Alpha. It's okay. I don't remember all of this. I don't remember all of it. It's okay. But anyways, immediately they dash out. I got to find out what this order is. It's a code 1 alert, which signals that at the K7 station is under attack. So they come back from the break, from the opening credits, to arrive at the K7 station. Now, as an aside, I had the K7 station model as a kid. My parents bought it for me. And I was terrified to put it together because of the glue. Remember, like, I don't know if you ever had, like, model glue would say, danger, there is a chance that you may become addicted to this or something. And so I would not do it. I made my dad put it together on our balcony in the second story apartment that we lived in. But it was pretty badass because not only was it the K7 station, but it also came with a little Enterprise and a little Klingon D7 battlecruiser. That was great. I never painted it. But the ships are all gray, so who cares, right? But, man, I had that station. I could twist it around. I could have the Enterprise fly around it, you know, and have the D7 that could fight. And then I think they got lost or something. My sister threw it away or whatever. Whatever. I'm putting a lot of my sister there. But it was great. So they show up at this D7 station, and there's no problem. What's going on? They beam down, and then this is where we start getting into the main problem, which is this guy, Nils Barrett. And I'm going to play you a couple of clips here tonight. Let me see. Let me play you this Nils Barrett guy here. So there's like, they're not under attack, but this undersecretary, Nils Barrett, feels as though that this grain has to be protected. Let me just play you this little clip here. Let's listen to this.
First officer, Mr. Spock.
And now, Captain, I want all available security guards. I want them posted around the storage compartments.
Storage compartments?
The storage compartments containing the Quadro Triticale.
The what? What's Quadro Triticale?
Wheat.
So what?
Quadro Triticale is not wheat, Captain. Of course, I wouldn't expect you or Mr. Spock to know about such things, but
Quadro triticale is a high-yield grain, a four-lobed hybrid of wheat and rye, a perennial also, if I'm not mistaken. Its root grain, triticale, can trace its ancestry all the way back to 20th century Canada.
Mr. Spock, major point.
Quadro triticale is the only earth grain that will...
Stop.
All right, so we got this grain here, and it needs to be protected because Sherman's Planet is under the auspices of the Organian Peace Treaty. Now, one nice thing about this episode is that they invoke a previous episode. As I'm using the word episode, episodic, not serialized. Sometimes Star Trek had that wonderful amnesia, as most episodic shows do sometimes, where you can watch in any order. It's like, well, I got a good story. But this, they refer back to the Organian Peace Treaty in Errand of Mercy, where the Organians said, you guys, Klingons, humans, you're not going to fight anymore. We're going to make everything super hot. Super hot. Super hot. That's a game I play. If it's all your controls going to be hot, if you go watch the Errand of Mercy, and I think for like, it was like 100 light year distance, there's just going to be no fighting there. I think it was 100 light year. It was like some weird small amount, actually, when you break it down. I'm going to look it up real quick here. Because it is kind of the Organian Peace Treaty. I hope this is super good for you guys to hear. All right, I don't have it. All right. For some reason, I thought it was like a small area. All right, forget it. Who cares about that? Who cares? For some reason, I thought it was a small area, but it doesn't seem to be listed in there. So the Organians said, hey, you guys knock it off. Klingons, humans, don't fight. At some point in time, you're going to become good buddies, which actually came true in Next Generation. So, but until then, the Klingons and the humans can't fight. So instead, they have to kind of present their case, and then someone's going to win Sherman's planet, which evidently is like a super cool place to be. And as a token of good gesture, the Federation's bringing over this Quattro Triticale. Now, Triticale is actually a real type of wheat in present day, in the 1960s, so they add this Quattro Triticale. The script, by the way, is written by David Gerald. For a long time, I thought that he was heavily rewritten, but it turns out he wrote a lot of this, so I'm going to give him a lot more credit than I used to. A lot of his drafts were very, very close, and a lot of the comedy put in there remains. So kudos to you, young sir. So we have this already set up, but I want to play this for you one more time because I want you to listen. This is pretty awesome.
First officer, Mr. Spock.
Mr. Spock?
Now, Captain, I want all available security guards. I want them posted around the storage compartments.
Storage compartments?
The storage compartments containing the Quadro Triticale.
The what?
Storage compartments. The what? Captain Kirk rarely repeats himself like that. But he does. This is like the fourth or fifth minute into this episode, and it's a key indicator that we're in for some fun. We've got this Nils Barris guy. This Nils Barris who is a bureaucrat. And what we have here is we're starting to build up this comedy around the absurdity of both bureaucracy and also about diplomacy in times of Cold War. And in this first scene, we have this ridiculous situation for Captain Kirk. He is the captain of, ostensibly, although never really called, the flagship of the Federation. He's the guy. This is the ship. And he's being charged to watch grain, to watch wheat, until it can be transported to a planet. He's going to sit on a space station and guard wheat. That's absurd. This gigantic starship, which can level a whole planet, just patrolling around the space station. But what it does, unexpectedly, is it gives us a chance to see Kirk and the Enterprise in a lower stakes game. In a lower stakes show where we can really kind of see what day-to-day life sort of is, in some ways. Not every episode, not every adventure, not every moment of Star Trek, of the Enterprise, can be interesting. A lot of it's got to be like day-to-day stuff. We got to fly over here. We got to escort this thing. We got to take this ambassador from here to here. We don't see any of that stuff, but there has to be those boring moments. If you watch Star Trek Beyond, in the opening, they have a little of that where Captain Kirk, played by Chris Pine, is talking about sort of the boredom of a five-year mission, where there are exciting moments, but there's a lot of day-to-day stuff, which is kind of, you know, not so brave new, you know, exploration, boldly going stuff. And this is one of them. This is guarding grain, and it rankles Captain Kirk. And so it catches him off guard. Storage compartments? The what? Now, that's just fun. But it does key us off that fun things are going on. All right, let's see. What happens? All right, give me a minute.
We're at the Royal Academy in Old Britain at the time.
Yeah, we heard that, Spock. So, Kirk is basically not on board with this, but both his first officer and later on, the Admiral, I don't know what his name was, tell him, you know what, you got to do this. This is actually kind of a big deal. You know, the whole Sherman's Planet thing is kind of a thing that we're going to have to attend to. And so begrudgingly, he says, okay, I'm going to beam down two dudes. And you're going to have to be okay with that. And I'm also going to say okay to shore leave. So he does that. And then this is where we get the second part of this, where we have this bar scene and, well, actually, yeah. And then that's when we see the triples with Cyrano Jones. Now, as an aside, I used to think his name was Cyrano Jones. I was young, but Cyrano Jones, that sounds more Star Trek-y until I realized it was Cyrano. Cyrano Jones played by Stanley Adams. A little over the top. Honestly, he's playing a very similar character as Harry Mudd. As Harvey Dent and Harry Mudd. But there is always something that is just a little too theatrical and big, and we'll get into that in a second. Roger Caramel did a much better job, as I thought. He was much more of a foil for Captain Kirk. But anyways, Cyrano Jones has this creature, this tribble, this little fuzzy thing, which I guess they made like 1,000 of. Literally, they made 1,000 of them to populate this episode. And Uhura gets kind of, she's like, oh, that's adorable. Cyrano gives her one, and that's where the problems start with that. Then the problems accelerate when the Klingons show up. And let's see if we can play this clip where we meet Captain Koloff. I think.
I don't want them here, but I don't have the authority to refuse.
While I have the authority to act, I'm going to use it.
My dear Captain Koloff, you may indeed bring your men down on shore leave, with only 12 at a time. And I assure you that for every man you bring down here, I shall have one security guard. There'll be no trouble.
Captain Kirk, there's been no formal declaration of hostilities between our two respective governments. So naturally, our relationship will be a peaceful one.
Let us both take steps to keep it that way.
Oh. William Campbell played this, and as I said before, he was Trelane in The Squire of Gothos, and he's pretty good in this one. He's not as good as it was in the other one, but he's chewing up the scenery in a different way that Cyrano Jones is, that Stanley Adams is. He knew right from the start that he wanted to be that foil against Captain Kirk. I think one of the quotes he said is that he was, the way he wanted to play it when they brought him in for casting, they said, how do you want to play this? He says, I want to be the guy, I want to be the Klingon, that no one else is going to kill Kirk. And even I'm not going to kill Kirk, but I'm going to be the one to watch him suffer. And that's what they cast him as. Now, he doesn't have that same gravitas that statement said, but he's fun. And what he's doing here, what we're seeing here, is this great Cold War exchange between these two captains who would be much happier if they could just turn their ships on each other and just have at it and just duke it out. But instead, they both have been assigned to watch Wheat. Now, we don't know if Captain Koloff is in on this subterfuge that's going to happen later on, but certainly he just brimming at the idea of taking on Kirk. And we'll see him later on in DS9, I think it's Blood Oath, where him and the other former Klingon captains all get together. But he's a wonderful sight to see because he just energizes that scene. And suddenly we get the stakes. They're much higher than we thought. The Klingons are here. They're involved. All right. Meanwhile, the Tribbles are starting to populate on the ship. Not a big deal there. McCoy can't quite figure out what's going on, why they're breeding, but it's all fun and games. Then they beam down Scotty and Chekov and a bunch of dudes to have a little bit of shore leave. And in the bar where they're having a drink, and they have another little exchange about the Romulan, about vodka versus scotch, you know, mother's, you're drinking mother's milk there. We have Klingons in the background. One played by Michael Pataki, I believe his name was. And this dude, I love this dude. This dude comes in and he goes after the Enterprise. He starts poking at Scotty and Chekov and the other random red-haired dude who's a 40-year-old ensign who is actually the stuntman for Captain Kirk, for William Shatner. But they needed him in this episode because they're going to do a lot of stunt work coming up. So I think they gave him actually a couple lines. I don't remember his name. But this guy, Michael Pataki, as Korax, the second in command to Captain Koloth, is down there in the bar, and he starts going after these guys. And Scotty's cool as a cucumber until Korath goes after him.
You were supposed to prevent...
Oh, not that one. Damn it. All right, here it is.
Of course, I'd say that Captain Kirk deserves his ship. We like the Enterprise. Mm-hmm. We really do.
That sagging old rust bucket is designed like a garbage scow. Half the quadrant knows it. That's why they're learning to speak Klingonese.
Klingonese? Oh.
Mr. Scott.
Laddie, don't you think you should rephrase that?
Listen to this.
You're right. I should. I didn't mean to say that the Enterprise should be hauling garbage. I meant to say that it should be hauled away as garbage.
Oh, shit. Scotty stands up while this dude's laughing and punches the shit out of him. And then there's a big fight, and then he backhands another dude. And we have got ourselves a brouhaha, a Donnybrook, a fight. It's a good fight. Man, people are flying all over the place. That's why they had that 40-year-old ensign who looks like Kirk's stunt double, because he is Kirk's stunt double. And man, the fists are flying, and we got this crazy music playing. Where is that music? This music's so much fun. It's like a bar brawl in the Old West. The music here sounds so much. And it's so lighthearted and fun because you got Tribbles and you got Cyrano Jones and the bartender runs off and Cyrano Jones, Stanley Adams is doing this long, protracted bit of getting drinks and all sort of nonsense. Chekov is punching this dude in the stomach and then getting thrown away. And everyone's flipping all over the place, and then guards run in and hustle everyone off the place. It's just so much fun. And this song right here has like 15 different endings to it. With Cyrano Jones drinking a drink that he put in his pocket. That was too much. Him doing it was too much. But Michael Pataki saying, being hauled away as garbage. Is so delightful. The fools often say that because it's everything everyone does in this episode is so juicy. Everyone has been given liberty to push the bubble a little bit. As you act, and as me, a former actor, I was on The Invisible Man on the Sci-Fi Channel, you try to act in a certain circle of expectations. That's Stanislavski. I know that. There's a circle of expectations of what is in your sphere of reality. And if you're talking to bananas, that's fine. That's in your sphere of reality. If you're on a starship, that's fine. That's in your sphere of reality. If you're a cop working in, you know, 1840s, Chicago, that's your sphere of reality. In this episode, they expanded that sphere a little bit so they could exaggerate things. And everybody digs into it and has fun. From what the reports on the set were, is that everyone was just having a good time and laughing, so much so that the director, Joseph Peavy, had to chide them, had to say, guys, haul it in, even though he was pushing them more and more and more to have fun. Because he had to be. He had to be the guy who said, guys, we have to... He had to be the barrier. Otherwise, it just gets so out of bounds that the audience doesn't know what's going on. It becomes an inside joke. So he had to be the referee. But he allowed them to go further than they had ever gone before. Stanley Adams, as I said, again, way too big for this stuff. He orders this drink and he pulls out this drink and he sniffs it with so much grandeur. It's just too much. But he did go on to write The Mark of Gideon in third season. Not a great episode, but you know what? He was an actor who turned into a writer. And so for that, I have respect. All right, so I'm building up this case for the comedy of this. And this is, again, another favorite scene. And it falls right in the middle of the episode. This is where Kirk pulls everyone aside and says, all right, who did this? Who did it? And I'm going to play this big-ass long scene here because this is classic comedy. As I am building this up, in the center of this episode, the high point of the comedy is this long sequence here where Kirk...
We're supposed to prevent trouble, Mr. Scott.
Aye, Captain.
...is asking Scotty who did it.
Who threw the first punch, Scotty?
I did, Captain.
You did, Mr. Scott?
Mr. Scott?
What caused it, Scotty?
They insulted us, sir.
Must have been some insult.
Aye, it was.
You threw the first punch.
Aye. Chekhov wanted to, but I held him back.
You held... Why did Chekhov want to start a fight?
The Klingons say... Is this off the record?
No, this is not off the record.
Well, Captain, Klingons call you a tin-plated, overbearing, swaggering dictator with delusions of godhood.
Is that all?
No, sir. They also compared you with a Denebian slime devil.
I see.
And then they said that you were...
I get the picture, Scotty.
Yes, sir.
And after they said all this, that's when you hit the Klingons.
No, sir.
No?
No, I didn't. You told us to avoid trouble.
Oh, yes.
And I didn't see that it was worth fighting about. After all, we're big enough to take a few insults. Aren't we?
What was it they said that started the fight?
They called the Enterprise a garbage scow. Sir.
I see. And that's... when you hit the Klingon.
Yes, sir.
You hit the Klingons because they insulted the Enterprise, not because they...
Well, sir, this was a matter of pride.
All right, Scotty. Dismissed.
What a great scene that was. That is... If you go back and listen to some of the great, like, duos, comedy duos of the 30s, 40s, 50s, you know, like Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis or Abbott and Costello, you get this banter that they have between them where the punchline is, we have the punchline established. When did you throw the first punch? When they insulted the Enterprise. But it's the journey which is so much more fun. Listen to all the different times that Kirk slows it down. And that's when you threw it, you know, like he keeps on interrupting. He keeps on asking for clarification on each little bit because they're extending the bit. Now, this isn't by happenstance. I think Bob Justman And Gene Kuhn basically went in, the producers went into David Gerald and said, you know what, this is a funny sequence, expand it. And so they did. And they made it a whole-on comedy bit. It's a big, you can look at it one or two ways, as a corny comedy bit or as comedy at its best, at its most pure being put on display. Or as best as Star Trek could put on a comedy sketch, this was it. And here's something else I'll tell you about this. People always nag on William Shatner for being an over-actor, but the amount of reserve he puts in this episode is something to watch. He is constantly being beset upon in this episode, and it just pains him over and over and over again. He doesn't have to overact, and he doesn't. Yes, his cadence is always going to be like this, but watch the subtlety of his acting. I'm not kidding. Watch some of this stuff. It's pretty good. This scene and some of the other scenes are going to be the genesis. Give me Genesis of another go-around of this in 86. And I'm sure you can guess what I'm talking about. It's Star Trek IV. Ironically, Leonard Nimoy did not like this episode for a long time. And you can see it in the very last scene of this episode when they're joking around and Scotty says there'll be no Tribble at all. You can see Leonard Nimoy turn away and be like, oh man, this is rough. He was a method actor. He wanted to be serious about everything. He wanted to really dig into the role and have meaningful moments. And this was just goofiness. But when he directed Star Trek IV, and even Star Trek III a little bit, he interjected that sense of fun. And Kirk and Spock have so much fun in this in a couple of scenes. And Scotty and Kirk have so much fun. Everyone's having fun in this, and they're being relaxed, and they're being subtle. And it's especially Kirk, because he's the one being beset upon. So that's a great scene. If you watch anything, go watch that, because it's just silly, and it's a fun little romp of a scene. All right, so what am I looking here? All right, so after that, the Tribbles are breeding. Kirk says, get them out of here. They go talk to Cyrano Jones. It's kind of a wasted scene here. We do see more of Aaron Darwin. Now, here's another thing I can tell you about Aaron Darwin here. I met the actor playing Aaron Darwin. I've told you this before. Aaron Darwin, God, what the hell is his name? I'll find his name. His name is... hold on. Okay, featuring Charlie Brill. Charlie Brill was in the very first TV show that I ever acted in. He was in Silk Stockings. And the very first show I ever acted in where I had one line, hey, someone's here to see you. Don't be making time on my dime. That was my role as the photo booth manager or the photo lab manager. Charlie Brill was there. And he was Aaron Darwin. He was in Silk Stockings many, many years back. He was also an accomplished comedian. Interestingly enough, in this episode where there's so much comedy, he did no comedy. He was the act that followed him and his Mitzi McCann, I believe? The two of them had a comedy duo that followed the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. That's a way to kill a career. But Charles Brill went on to do Silk Stockings for many seasons and made lots of good money off that, so good on him. And I met him, and I got to talk to him, and I have a picture of it somewhere. I'll put it on the Facebook page. Or I just want to talk about Star Trek Facebook page, where we put all sorts of cool stuff on there, including someone who's going to build a giant Enterprise out of Legos, Mega Blocks. Check that out. And I got to talk to him about it. That was really cool. And I don't know, there was some guy who was next to us as we were talking about, he was talking about the ship or something, and he's like, whoa, man, did this thing really fly? And Charles Brill was like, what are you, an idiot? Of course it didn't fly. It's a set. Come on. And I always thought that was really funny. He was a nice guy. He was very nice. Let me take a picture with him, even though we're in the same scene together. He was a good guy. All right, so let me see. You know, the problem with doing a deep dive all by yourself is that there's no way to break. When you run out of words, there's no one to interject. All right, so they beam back to the Enterprise, and the Tribbles are multiplying even more so. McCoy says they're born pregnant. They find them in the food replicators because they got through the air shafts, which means that they could get in to the Quattro Triticale. So they beam back to K7. So there's a lot of back and forth in this episode. They get to the grain storage bins, which are both below and above. And Kirk opens the door to the above bin and Tribbles fall all over him. They just spill out all over him, thousands of them covering him into a mound of Tribbles. And we have another great scene. Now, I don't have the clip for it, but as he's talking, Tribbles keep hitting him on the head. And he plays it again so deftly. So he is just so downtrodden at this point. I mean, he's just so over all of this. Even as the mystery is resolving itself, as it's accelerating that someone has poisoned the grain, the Quattro Triticale, he just wants someone to close the door so the Tribbles don't hit him. Now, if you watch Trial and Tribulation, the DS9 sort of homage to this, with Charles Brillon again as Aaron Darvin, you know that they've retconned it to have Sisko and Dax in that grain trying to find the bomb that Aaron Darvin held hidden. Maybe we'll do an episode, deep dive of that one too, because that one's a fun one. That's a nice homage to this one. But anyways, they figure out that it's been poisoned, and then they go back to the main, I don't know, the administrator's office, and they figure out that Aaron Darvin is in fact a Tribble, he's in fact a Klingon, or a Klingon, or a Klingon. This episode has a Klingon and Klingon, many different interpretations, but certainly not Tribble. But Aaron Darvin is revealed to be a Klingon because his blood temperature, his heartbeat is all wrong, and his blood temperature is, Jim, this man's a Klingon. What is it, too high, too low? We don't figure that out. Plus, Klingons have like two hearts, as far as we know. All right, so they figure out that he's the saboteur, and with that, there will be no fighting, and Captain Koloff is forced to retreat. Cyrano Jones must spend the next 17 years cleaning up these Tribbles from the space station, which seems really punitive and weird, right? Again, Captain Kirk bestows these strange punishments on people. Khan, he, you know, strands on a planet. Harvey Mudd, he leaves on a planet full of robots. Cyrano Jones, he leaves. In fact, from last week, where he, like, marooned Harry Mudd on this planet full of robots, of ex-wife robots, and now Cyrano Jones, he maroons on this space station to clean up Tribbles. He's really kind of a jackass. He's really a very capricious captain and judge, isn't he? He's worse than Trelane as far as his sentencing. But it's funny, isn't it? I mean, it's a nice thing. And then we have our final little tag of the episode where we get the nice little pun at the end. Is this it?
Fuck.
Ah, there we go. This is going to kill Kirk. Oh, geez. And even... All right, forget that. No, I'm going back on it. Is it this one? It's this one. When I was... No. All right, doesn't matter. But I had that. Where was that? Maybe it's this? Ugh. It's this.
Really, Mr. Spock?
There we go.
Of course.
Spock.
Based on computer analysis, of course. Taking into account the possibilities of...
Gentlemen, I don't want to interrupt this mutual admiration society, but I'd like to know where the Tribbles are.
Tell him, Spock. Well, it was Mr. Scott who performed the actual engineering.
Mr. Scott.
See how we're pushing the punchline
where
further and further away?
Where are the Tribbles? I used the transporter, Captain.
You used the transporter?
Aye.
Well, where did you transport them? Scott, you didn't transport them into space, did you?
Captain Kirk, That'd be inhuman.
Well, where are they?
I gave them a very good home, sir.
Where?
I gave them to the Klingons, sir.
Gave them to the Klingons?
Aye, sir. Before they went into warp, I transported the whole kit and caboodle into the air engine room, where there'll be no trouble at all.
And this is the one false moment here. We're all laughing. Oh, but I love this sound cue. I think I wanted just to play that for you, just to hear that last little triumphant sound cue. It was only in a couple of the episodes. A Piece of the Action is the other one, too. The only freeze frame at the end of the episode they ever had. But again, you hear this comedy patter where the punchline is there'll be no tribble at all, and they subdivide the questioning to try to get as much comedy mileage as they can between point A and point B. It's sort of like a relativistic thing. The faster you travel, the slower you go, sort of thing. That doesn't make any sense. But it's fun. The one thing I don't like is when they all kind of like fake laugh, especially William Shatner. I don't know if William Shatner actually knows how to laugh. And when he really laughs, he giggles. When he laughs as Captain Kirk, it's like, that's not a real laugh. Everyone fake laughs at that. You see Leonard Nimoy kind of like looking off like, Jesus, I got to find a new job. But everyone has a kind of fake laugh. It's fine, though. It's a fun little bit, and then we're out the door. Let me clean up some of this stuff here. And that's it. That's the episode. Funny. Fun. Fan fiction-esque. Typical day on the Enterprise. Kind of a just low-stakes adventure. But the audience loved it. Because it gave us what we wanted to. That feeling that we are all kind of in on this normal day having a good time. Sitting around playing poker. Hey, we gotta guard some grain this episode. Let's just have fun with it. And they did. And we did. And one of the things that makes Star Trek so enduring, I believe, is that gentle blend of drama and occasionally comedy like this. Again, I invoked a show like Battlestar Galactica, which is so serious, and it has its 15-year anniversary, and I love the show. But no one's clamoring for that to come back continuously. But to me, Star Trek has always had those moments of comedy, and it has constantly tried to replicate that. It's no mistake that Star Trek IV is one of the most popular, most successful of the movies because it was so funny. Even Star Trek First Contact had lots of comedy bits in it. Probably the most comedy of all the other Next Generation episodes. It's these lighthearted moments which gives us a chance to breathe and relax and have fun and enjoy it. Again, I will say that in the first and third movies of the Kelvin universe, there was fun. And when we have that kind of fun, when we allow ourselves to watch these characters and to give them a little more latitude to be human, it makes us feel closer to them. Just like with me and the Invisible Man and the fans 20 years ago. My God, it was 20 years ago. Having that moment where we can see those characters get closer makes us as an audience feel closer to them. It builds that bond. And that's something that we want to come back to. We want to have that fun every once in a while. Not all the time, but just enough so we can share a laugh and then move on. Because comedy, like tribbles, multiplies. No, it doesn't. But that's the best I could come up with a tag. All right, so this was my deep dive. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I know I enjoyed talking about this stuff. And it's a one-taker. I don't stop you guys. So every once in a while you hear me kind of like, yeah. But that's okay, right? I mean, how many have I done of these things? If you're still listening at this point in time, thank you. Thank you for listening to all this nonsense and fun. This is fun for me. I hope it's fun for you. As I said before, check out our Facebook page. If you have a chance, leave a 5-star review on iTunes. We'll read it if we get a chance on the podcast. Leave us a comment on the Facebook page. We'll read that too. We have a fun little place there. So, all right. Thank you for joining me. I'm Mike McCafferty, and I just want to talk about Star Trek.
Distract sequence completed and engaged.
Don't you understand?
When the train comes in, everybody rides.
Your daddy can put them up, can he?
Strike limits. Flame the dark troop salt. Big chief legacy. Way link complete. Way link.
I consider your security measures a disgrace.
In my opinion, you have taken this entire very important project far too lightly.
On the contrary, sir, I think of this project as very important. It is you I take lightly.